I for I. You've heard that it is said, I for I and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you, take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Lord, open our hearts for the teaching of His word.
Amen. Morning, everyone. Those who don't know you, or lots of visitors this morning. My name's Andrew. Is the microphone okay? Is this one? For any visitors here, this is not my day job. I do something very boring during the week in an office in a touch of town, so a bit of moonlighting here on a Sunday morning. We're carrying on our series, sermon series we've been doing for the last few weeks on the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. And I was thinking, if I was sitting down nearly 2,000 years ago, next to Matthew, wherever his scribe was, writing down this gospel, I think I might have said, do you really want to include these verses? Are you sure? It's a good story here, Matthew. It's reading really well. Love the bit about the wise man. Loved all that. It's going really well. But, you know, there could be something big here. This could really grow. There's a lot going on. Jesus, we all know the miracles and stories, and we believe he rose from the dead. It's great. Worldwide religion, it could happen. But is this really the way? Things like this? You could just maybe miss them out. There was a chap in the early church called Marcion or Marcion. He was called a heretic in those days. These days it might have been a bit kinder and said, well, just had different views. And he took a view that he didn't really like a lot of the Bible. It was just a bit too difficult for him. He kept chopping bits out. And eventually all of the Old Testament went. Most of what they had of the New Testament at the time went. He had a bit of Luke's gospel and a few of Paul's letters. And I must have known when Matt gave me this passage, I had similar views to Mark. But here we are, Matthew chapter 5. Let me just turn to it. If you go to the next slide, that would be great. Thank you. My first reaction, as you probably gathered when I read this, was a rather furrowed brow. You have heard it said, an eye for an eye, in verse 38 to 39. And tooth for tooth, and I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And my furrowed brow reaction then sort of thought, well, this is quite tough. We struggle with this passage, and a few questions come to mind. It's like sort of, well, if Jesus said this, does this mean, so what? So, and I was thinking, well, does it mean then, was Jesus just being weak? And is he asking us just to be weak? Is it about letting bad people get away with being bad? And then, for those of you who know your Bibles a bit better, is it just the Bible's full of contradictions? You know, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And Jesus says this, turn the other cheek. So lots of questions coming to my mind. I'm conscious that we've had a full first part of the service. I'm not the main attraction here. There was a young lady on the stage who was definitely the main attraction here. So let's just run through a few of these things fairly briefly and see where we get to this morning. First one in that list. Is Christianity a religion of weakness? Is turning the other cheek, is not saying eye for eye, is that a sign of weakness? Well, very briefly, as many of you here will have probably thought over the years, I would say it can be harder. It can be harder and more difficult and requires more strength of a certain sort to turn the other cheek, not to answer fire with fire, not to return an argument with an even greater argument, not to fight against the fight, and to go with what Jesus is saying here. So I'd suggest it is very far from being weak. Matt talked a couple of weeks ago, I think, about being meek and how we often confuse meekness with weakness. In these beatitude at the start of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And it's a similar idea here. It's challenging, it's really tough to take Jesus' words at face value here. Not just go tit for tat and return for as good as you get. Someone said recently in a talk I was at the cathedral, I think it was something like this, try being meek for a week, and you'll find it's not weak to be meek. I cannot say that again. If we could go on to the next slide, that'd be great. Over the centuries, there have been people who have put this into practice, people who have got far more courage than me. I've just thought of a few up on the slide here. A couple of them may not have had a Christian faith, I don't know. One certainly did, or two certainly did. So we have up here on the slide someone who took the view that just by sitting on a bus, they could stand against racism. Another person who took the view that by standing up for what he believed in, knowing he would go to prison for his faith in Jesus, he did that. And he died for his faith in a Nazi prison. Someone else was a young lawyer in South Africa, and then later on in his life, in the Indian subcontinent, took the view that passive resistance was the way to stand against the cruelty and the excesses of colonialism. And then there was an MP a couple of hundred years ago, a strong Christian faith, who fought against the evils of slavery with words, not taking up arms, fought against the evils of the day with his faith, and found the strength to do that. You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other ones. If we could go on to the next slide, that would be great. Thank you. But it's still tough, isn't it? It's still tough, this one. The case for the prosecution against Jesus, still there. If he's going to stand up 2,000 years ago and say these words, it's a tough one, yes. So my second objection, as I was thinking about this week, to Jesus' teaching, is it just letting bad people get away with it? Well, let's go back to the Old Testament law, where this comes from, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. A couple of verses, if you want to look them up now or at home, pretty much says what it says, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I think the context here, very briefly, is the law being given in Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy, a law, a code of laws being given for a society. It's a penal code, it's a justice system being given for a society. If you go forward to the New Testament, Jesus in these words is not saying, doesn't say in Matthew chapter 5, let's do away with all laws of the state. He's not saying that. He's not saying, let's abandon the criminal justice system in the Roman Empire, because I think it's not very good. He's not saying that. He does not say, let's do away with all the Roman soldiers. Let's have no police. Let's have no laws of that sort. And earlier in Matthew chapter 5, he says, not one iota, not one jot of the law, referring to the Jewish law, will be done away with. He's also not saying, stand by if your friends or family are being attacked or abused. He's not saying stand by and let that happen. Meekness, not weakness. He's not saying these things. And later on in Romans chapter 13, Paul, one of the leading lights of the early church, St. Paul, carries on this idea, almost stands up, if you like, for the Roman law, the law of the land, and says that as Christians, we should not reject the law and the government that is given to us. What do I think Jesus is saying here? What do I think he's saying? Well, I think he's saying, if it's one-to-one, if you're in a conflict situation, if you're in a dispute, if you're in an argument, and it's one-to-one, you have a choice how to react. You have a choice. There is this law given to the Jewish people. We have laws of the state, laws in the Roman Empire, a penal code, that still stands. If it's one-to-one and someone's really coming at you, I think Jesus is saying, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye. But I, Jesus, is saying, you have a choice. You can react differently to this. You can be a hard surface. Whether hate, the abuse, yes, sometimes the violence, it can bounce straight back off you, and some, and go back to the other person who's having a go. That's on the line you can take. Or he's saying you can react differently. I was thinking how to explain this, or thinking how to explain it to myself, really. A few weeks ago, there was the 2020 World Cup in cricket. I don't know if anyone's a cricket fan yet. We have loads of footballing analogies from the front in the sermon. So I'm just going to chuck in a cricket one. I'm more of a cricket and rugby person myself. And that's not being made any better by my childhood allegiance to Newcastle United. So anyway, cricket, 2020 World Cup. If you've got a fast bowler coming at you, hurling a ball at 90 miles an hour down 22 yards at you, and you're the batsman, while it might be tempting to try and hit the ball straight back as hard as you can at the bowler's head, that's not the best cricket shot to do. Ball's coming at you, 90 miles an hour. Perhaps the best cricket shot against a fast bowler is to try and hit it square of the wicket, on either side, use the pace of the ball. There's no slip fielders, deflect it. Try and deflect the ball, go behind you, let it bounce off. Don't let it go straight back to the bowler. I tried that once at school. I didn't try to knock the bowler's head off. I was just trying to hit the ball. I got caught out. It's actually a really bad cricket shot trying to hit the ball straight back at the bowler. Tough and doesn't work. Much better, the pace, the force of it, just let it go one way or the other, square of the wicket, even behind, or if you're someone like Joss Butler or Dilshan, the Sri Lankan chap, you'll do a scoop shot over the wicket on his head, to the boundary. I can see I've lost a lot of people. Right, cricket, it's the game. Football, cricket, that's where it's at. Called with the fans this summer. Go down to Warwickshire, forget him.
It's not either or, Andrew, it's both ends.
Yes, exactly. What I'm saying is, it's just my way of thinking about this, as I was thinking this week. You have the aggression, the abuse, dare I say, the vitriol that comes to you in work. Yes, I've been there. Sometimes family, I've been there. Sometimes friends. I think Jesus is saying you have a choice. Yes, there is the eye for the eye approach. In the wider society, that's good in a sense. We have a penal code. We have a justice system. But one-to-one, can you deflect the anger a bit? Do your cricket shot to the side. Don't always try and shove the anger straight back at someone. One thing, just the last little bullet point on this section, it's not a bully's charter. Pick my words carefully here. Very carefully indeed. Sometimes, for people at school, for children, especially when they get a bit older in teenagers, this can be a difficult passage, I think. If they're in a really tough situation at school, they somehow have to take it. Or if you're at work, and you have a boss who's bullying you, you can think, I have to take this. I've just got to be meek. I've got to go into my shell. I don't think Jesus is saying this by any means, and I don't think the Bible ever says this. You stand up to the bully. There are different ways, of course, of standing up to the bully. Get help where you need to. Perish the thought that anyone in this room has a characteristic of a bully. Can't imagine that. But if you do, there's nowhere in the Bible that gives you any comfort. Similarly, if you're in a situation of abuse, I'll spell this out. This is not for the person who's being abused. Something that says you should take it. I heard a talk 20 years ago or so by a nationally known, the internationally known Baptist speaker. I won't mention the name. And on the talk, he said that if someone is in a situation of domestic violence, they're a woman, they're a Christian, they should somehow accept it. And this would help the husband come around to see wonders of the wife's faith. I didn't like that then, I don't like it now. I won't dwell on this. If anyone here is in that situation, being on the receiving end of any kind of abuse, this is not the verse which says take it. Remember I said at the start of the section, there's a penal code, there's a justice system, and Jesus is not saying to the Jews of his time, abandon that. And I'm not saying that now. If you're in that situation, get help. Find help. The offender is sorting out. The offender could be used in the chapter. I was in a situation, again, this talk may be recorded, I'll have to choose my words carefully. 20 years ago when I lived in London, the family was alleged the husband was dishing out something not very pleasant to the wife. It wasn't dealt with. It went on to a situation where there was a conviction against the husband for something very, very serious. Conviction was later quashed. Who knows what went on? I just look back at that situation and think, if only that had been sorted out. Shall we move on? Isn't the Bible just full of contradictions? You have heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say something different, Jesus said. So, the Old Testament and the New Testament, well, they're just a bunch of contradictions. Is it all no good, this Bible thing? Should we just chuck it out? Go and read your Darwin, read Richard Dawkins' stuff. It's all biology, botany, and fossil records. Throw the Bible out, it's rubbish. Can't believe a word of it. That's how the argument goes these days, isn't it? Something like that. Right, nice trick you can pull it off if you're of that bent. The popular perception, the Old Testament is all about judgment. You've got God there with a long beard, sitting on a throne up high, dishing out judgment. Leviticus, Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Tough stuff. Contrasting position is Jesus. He's a bit like a hippie, something like the 60s and 70s. That's the popular perception, can be the Old Testament and the New Testament. Does anyone remember the advent in the early 70s? Again, I'm losing half my audience here. The early 70s, there was a Coca-Cola advert where they took a song from the new secret, I'd like to teach the world to sing. And it was a great advert. I loved it. Anyway, lots of flower people sitting around drinking Coke. And I just sometimes think that's the popular perception of Jesus and his disciples. Give them a couple of guitars and there they are. It's all the Old Testament, Leviticus, Numbers. No, judgment, terrible. Is it really like that? Well, we could do theses on this. I've got people in the audience here I know who've done theology degrees and can explain this better than me. A couple of things, shall we say. The Old Testament law, and it says an eye for an eye, I believe, is putting a limit on justice. It's not saying, come on, you've got to be really tough about this. It's saying an eye for an eye rather than a life for an eye. Culture at the time, 1500 BC or so, or maybe even earlier, very violent societies. Feuds, tribal wars, whatever, you name it, was going on. An eye for an eye, when we're looking at it, is to say justice has to be appropriate. I'm not actually sure anyone ever took this literally, but it's saying if someone comes against your family, does something wrong, a bodily injury, don't go and wipe out that tribe completely. There's a limit and there's a measure to justice. And a couple of verses after this, actually, in Exodus, where it's taken from Exodus chapter 21. Lovely little bit. If you knock out your servant's tooth, you've got to let your servant go free. How measured is that? It's not that high. Adjust a little bit. Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus gets about press these days on this tough, judgmental Old Testament. A few verses from chapter 19 in Leviticus. Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. I am the Lord. Do not hate your brother in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly so that you will not share in his guilt. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people. Love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. There, in the midst of Leviticus, the judgmental Old Testament, don't seek revenge. Love your neighbor as yourself. I think what we have here is Jesus changing the perspective. He's not changing the picture. He's not writing a new religion. He's not abandoning the Old Testament. He's not setting up a completely new faith. He's just saying, shift your focus. Yes, the law does say an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But the law also says, don't take revenge on your brother. Love your neighbour as yourself. When you're in a situation of quarrels and disputes, what perspective are you going to take? You may need to just shift the way you're looking at the problem. Shift the way you're looking at the situation. Can that deal with it better than going back fight for fight, tit for tat? Can we go on to the next slide? Thank you. And then this passage goes on. various things. Let him have your cloak if he asks you for a shirt. Go the extra mile, and so on. Jesus is warming up now. He's getting going. He's got into his stride here. And again, similar themes. He's saying you have a choice in how you deal with people. It can be tit for tat. You can take out a lawsuit if someone sues you. You don't have to. If you do this tit for tat all the time, there is no break in the chain of hatred, discord, and bitterness and conflict. Instead, you actually add more links to this chain. It gets longer, and it will bind you as well as the person who is having a go at you. And this will get worse and worse in your situation. So instead, he's saying, there is another way. Go the extra mile. It's in our popular culture, isn't it? I was Googling some images that go the extra mile. And it's something I hear at work as well. I work in a large, recently large commercial corporate law firm. And you'll hear this kind of phrase a lot in management speak these days. It's part of our culture. Go the extra mile. Do more for your clients. Absolutely. That means you want me to work later and hard for the same amount of money. I was hearing a trailer on BBC recently for Rick Stein's latest travel odyssey. And it was something like, Rick Stein goes the extra mile. Where did he go? He went to the south of France to eat some food. It's fantastic. Try out your job. It's great. Go the extra mile. It's in the popular culture. As some of you will know, where does this phrase come from? Well, some of you will know. It's from an old Roman custom, possibly a law, I don't know. A Roman soldier in the occupied territories of the Roman Empire was allowed to go and tap someone on the shoulder. They had like a heavy load, you know, your average person, Palestine at the time, and say, good sir, would you kindly mind carrying my burden and my pack for a mile? You can phrase it a bit differently, but that's the gist of it. And you, or we, as citizens of the or people at the time in Palestine, would have said, of course, I'd love to do that. And you had no choice. So the force of Jesus' words are really quite strong here. He's talking to people in Palestine who have an occupying Roman army, who would not have been liked, to say the least. And he's saying, you know that custom where they can get you to carry their burden for a mile? Right? If someone asks you to do that, a Roman soldier asks you, carry for another mile. Oh, it's gone down well, would it? It's tough. It's tough. It's part of this thing of Jesus saying, take a different view. Don't always do the expected. That chain of bitterness and hatred otherwise can keep growing. There is another way. Give to the one who asks you. This passage just keeps on giving, doesn't it? Now it's on our wallets. Karen's going to speak on this in a week or two's time, so I won't dwell on this much. A couple of things to mention. We are stewards of our wealth on this earth. Whatever wealth we have, ultimately, it comes from God, I would say. So we use it wisely. And we have here a call to generosity in an age that has lost the will to give. A call to generosity. The other side, I would say that as stewards, we do have to exercise some judgment in our life, whatever wealth we have. There's another verse later on in the Bible, in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. I won't read it out entirely, but it's St. Paul saying something like, those who don't work shan't eat. It's the idea of the burgeoning Christian community and sharing things and food and other stuff being handed out amongst the community. And it was just a little counter from Paul trying to stop people abusing the system. So I'd say two things. Yes, be generous. Yes, be generous. But, practically, sometimes it is difficult. And I think you do have to exercise some judgment. If you start at the top of New Street in Victoria Square one lunchtime, as I do sometimes when I go out for a sandwich or whatever, by the time you get to the bottom of New Street, the HSBC Bank, if you wanted to, you could probably have given away all your money you ever had. And I'm not just talking about people on the street asking for money, but charity people asking for your credit card details. do think we have to exercise some judgment, but this is still a very powerful call to be generous. A pastor of mine in a church in London when I was young and single, Baptist church there, he said a lot of things I didn't agree with. He was quite a hardline Calvinist reformed chap, and we had some interesting discussions on that. One thing he said stuck with me. If you're going to get this thing wrong about the giving, get it wrong on the side of being generous. That stuck with me. Now, a little example from this week. Thursday evening, I was out at a black tie dinner in the ICC, thrilling, the Birmingham Annual Law Society Legal Awards. Exciting library. I mean, it's just below the Baptist, I know. It's almost there. Anyway, hundreds of lawyers at the ICC, dressed up in our fines, black ties, gowns, dresses, whatever. We got there a bit early. The group from my firm, we didn't win. We got nominated for some law firm of the year. We didn't win. Anyway, Giles Brandreth doing his best at the France, we presented in the speech. We got there a bit early. We sat down in sort of one of those cafe areas in the ICC. And there we are, I think three blokes in our black tie, bow ties, and the ladies all dressed to the nines. Poor chap comes up home. You can see he was homeless, but really bad. He's coming along, clearly asking for money, clutching a big issue. And we all sort of looked around the table nervously. I was probably the only one there, Christy. That doesn't have me any better than anyone else. And he was coming along, shuffling along, looked at my colleagues, and he said, you know, sorry, you know, just here for a night out. Goodbye, and I thought, I'll go and do something here. And then I saw he's carrying a copy of the big issue, and I thought, ah, that's my way in. I've got this sussed Sermon on the Mount. No trouble. I can lick this. I know where to go here. Oh, it's just easy, isn't it? It's giving business. No problem. So I've got a bit of money out. Yeah, I'll take the big issue off you. It can get messy when you start giving. It can get a bit tricky, kind of, when you follow Jesus' words. You don't know where it's going to end up. And then he says, oh, it's my last big issue. It's all then. It wasn't a, you know, licensed vendor. I'll need, and then he quoted quite a large sum of money for this one copy to get someone to mistake than I. So I handed him a note. I'd handed him a note at this point, and I thought, lots of things going through my mind. He's going to use whatever money I give him, probably on drink, maybe buy some food. This is not my normal rule that I'd work to, it's a charity, not to give to someone on the street, because they'll go to the nearest off license. I've given him my money. What can I do? Quickly through in my mind. I could ask for it back. No, that's not a good idea. That tie and dinner suits, that's just not going to play well, is it? Can I have my money back, please? I owe this person because you know. You just got to let it go. I've been conned in a way. He done me. The other people on the table next to me, they probably looked at me and thought, yeah, Andrew's been done. He's been done. I'm not kidding. He's handed over some money. I got it wrong. It gets messy when you start on Jesus' words at face value. It really does. But if I'm going to get it wrong, which I probably did that night, I'd rather get it wrong. Too generous. A couple of verses, a couple of quotations from an old Anglican bishop. Time moves on. J.C. Ryle, Anglican bishop from the 19th century. I like his writing. A bit old-fashioned. Read out the second one. The world can understand these things if it cannot understand doctrine. This can be the best way for a Christian to witness. To do what Jesus says here in these few verses. It's difficult. It's awkward. It can get messy. Why does it have an effect if you carry these things out? If you go on to the next slide. This is hard teaching, though. I'll draw to a conclusion in the next 3 minutes, 5 minutes, I reckon. This is hard teaching, though. And when I read it this week, I've read this passage for many, many years. Even after these years, still something jars in it. I don't know about you. You read it, and I just think, hang on, this doesn't seem quite right. It's just not quite right. It doesn't seem quite fair. I'm being asked as a Christian to be nice to people who are very unnice to me. I'm being asked to be generous to people who aren't going to be generous to me necessarily. I'm asking to take things on the chin, even literally sometimes. And it's not fair. And I was thinking, yep, God's not always fair with me. He doesn't always play by the rules with me. And then the next breath, and thank the Lord that's the case. Thank the Lord that's the case. That he's not always fair with me. A few verses that explain this. I'll read them out. I'll explain it better than I can. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And finally, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. If God was fair with me, if God played by the rules with me, I would not be forgiven. There'd be no mercy for me. There'd be no grace for me. There'd be no promise of eternal life when this world was done. I would get what's coming to me. I'd get my just deserts. I'm the one complaining to God. I'm the one who brings strife into my relationship with God. I'm the one who brings discord into that relationship. I kid myself if I think that I wouldn't have been standing out there with Peter outside gates denying Jesus. I kid myself if I think I would have been better than Peter there. And Jesus' response. What was Jesus' response when the soldiers beat him? When the Sanhedrin, the Jewish council, condemned him? When they hurled insults at him? When the soldiers mocked him? When they beat him? What was his response? The response wasn't an eye for an eye. When soldiers beat him, when they led him to the cross, his response was what he was preaching to us back in Matthew chapter 5. Can we do the final slide? Thank you. And so the Sermon on the Mount then becomes another Sermon on the Mount. A Sermon on the Mount of crucifixion. With no words to that sermon, it speaks very clearly to us. It speaks very clearly to me still. Jesus lived out his grace. He took the insults. He took the beatings. And he died for me. He died for you.